I first met Douglas in early 1972, when as a Footlights committee member, I helped to get him elected to membership of that society. Here's Graham Garden.
In the early 70s, many ex-Footlights were appearing on television screens. Aspiring performers who saw them were beginning to set their sights on admission to Cambridge and to the Footlights Society. One devoted fan of Monty Python was future author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Douglas Adams. However, his expectations of Footlights were not satisfied when he first approached the society.
I guess, you know, my impression of it was very much formed by, you know, what people who had come out of Footlights were doing, and the prime example, obviously, of that was Python. And arrived at Footlights to discover it seemed to be very, very much sort of rooted in the past. It was very much sort of, you know, big singing and dancing shows. My understanding of what Footlights was or ought to be was that it was a writer-performer group. And somehow there was this sort of creeping quasi-professionalism that sort of come into Footlights. It sort of said, no, what you do is you get the best people to write it and the best people to perform it. And to me, there's a logic there that doesn't quite work, because the best performers aren't necessarily the best people to perform the stuff that somebody else has written when they basically, you know, wrote it from their own point of view. So I guess, again, that was me being very sort of heavily influenced by, you know, the sort of Python ethic, because Python was a show of writer performers. Now, those guys, they mightn't be the best performers in the world, but they are by far the best performers of their own material, and their own material is absolutely unique. So I felt that was an ethic that was very important to me, in which I felt that Footlights was losing or had lost at its peril.
Friends and fellow comedy writers John Lloyd, Martin Smith and Will Adams take up the story.
I met him at university at Cambridge. He was in the next door college to mine, and I bumped him to parties and things of that kind. Everything he did was slightly offbeat, so he wanted to be in Footlights and do that sort of normal thing. But he was seen to be so eccentric in his comedy, that kind of mainstream group, which was very conservative in the early 70s. So he set up this review group called Adam Smith Adams, which ran a review at St. John's, which was an absolute stormer. It was definitely the funniest thing I saw in 3 years at Cambridge.
Adam Smith Adams we set up really because Footlights was a pretty sort of traditional organisation at that point. It was doing things in a particular way. We wanted to do things differently, but I think more importantly than that, they didn't want us in their Footlights review.
So we thought we would do our own thing. When we were publicising the first Adam Smith Adams review, we went along to the Cambridge Arts Theatre and just hired three costumes. Douglas as a turkey.
Douglas liked dressing up as a turkey, I don't know why. He did it several times. He did it for a film, we did it for our own show.
He injected the surrealism, the zaniness, and the mixture of his ideas and our ability to actually write them down seemed to work.
Mm. Douglas was very ambitious, but I think more than that, he was just very focused. He knew he could write. He really was. Mm. He had enormous confidence in his ability to write. And he knew from the beginning of term one at Cambridge precisely what he wanted to do with his life.
When Douglas did come down from Cambridge in the summer of 74, he had his eyes firmly set on a glittering career as a comedy writer-performer, but he was totally gutted to find himself omitted from the cast of that year's May Week review. This was the big end-of-term show, which actually took place in June because exams were held in May. It was a very useful platform for launching aspiring performers, as it usually went on from Cambridge to venues in Southampton, Oxford and Edinburgh. The 1974 review was particularly important that year because, after a visit by a deputation from the BBC, including radio and TV producers, a television version of the show was commissioned and plans were also made for a West End transfer. Naturally, Douglas was bitterly disappointed not to be cast as a performer, particularly as over 30% of the show had been written by the Adam Smith Adams team. But fortunately, fate was not totally unkind, because it was to open doors to him in other ways. The stage production was called Chocks, and 50 minutes of highlights were shown on BBC Two on 26th of August, under the title Cambridge University 1974 Footlights Review. And this was one of the more successful sketches written by Adam Smith Adams. It's called The Hole in the Wall Club, performed by the men of the cast, Clive Anderson, Jonathan Cantor, Jeffrey McGiven, Martin Smith, Riff Rees-Jones and Crispin Thomas.
Now, before I declare this meeting open, I'm afraid I have something rather serious to say. As yet, I don't know who to point the finger at, but it is somebody here. And what is more, what they have done in such an insidious, cunning way, treading carefully behind my back. So circumspect have they been in working their sinister wiles. So evil, so cunningly secret, that not only do I not know which one of you has done it, I do not even know what it is they have done. But be warned! I'm on my guard. Right, Mr. Secretary, if you'd like to begin by reading the minutes of the last meeting.
Certainly. The minutes of the 42nd meeting of the Crawleyan District Paranoid Society. The meeting was duly convened, and Mr. S.J. Stab in the back gave a spirited talk about the holes his next-door neighbours have been drilling in his wall. Then he went on to say... Hey! Someone's been tampering with his notes!
What do you mean?
I said someone's been tampering with his notes!
You're blaming me, aren't you?
Stop trying to put words into my mouth!
All right, let me have a look.
You don't believe me, do you?
Did I say I didn't believe you?
No.
Are you accusing me of insincerity?
Come on, admit it, you're blaming me, aren't you?
Be quiet. I can hear tape machines whirring.
Police sirens.
I can hear bombers.
I can hear intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Sorry. My mistake. Mr. Shelder, perhaps you'd like to calm us all down by telling us one of your jokes.
Yes. Well, there's this man, you see, and he goes into this pub, and he meets this bloke. And the bloke says to him, "Who was that lady I saw you with last night?" And the other bloke says, "You've been following me again!"
Taste.
I'm sorry, I got carried away. Somebody was staring at me maliciously.
You are blaming me, aren't you?
No, please. Mr. Secretary, would you like to continue with the minutes?
Having put the sandbags round the door, the meeting then continued. The chairman proposed a vote of thanks to Mr. Stab in the back. Mr. Hawkins said this was blatant favouritism.
I never said that!
And then went on to refute that remark.
I did not!
The vote was then taken! Everyone abstained.
Gentlemen, please remember the club motto. Après nous le déluge. Which loosely translates as "they're flooding after us, the Buccaneers!"
And it was that sketch which was to make a dream come true for Douglas. Ever since he was a schoolboy watching Monty Python on his grandmother's TV, Douglas had hero-worshipped the Python team, John Cleese in particular. In fact, Douglas often said that he went to Cambridge because he wanted to be John Cleese, and it took him some time to realise that the job was already taken.